Welcome to episode 8 of Get Her in the Game, a pitch podcast, where we recap and review and discuss the 10 wonderful episodes of Fox's pitch that we were blessed to receive before they dishonorably
ripped it out of our hands and hearts.
I'm Dee Dee. I go by Death's Daughter on Twitter. You can also hear me on the Black Girl Squee podcast. I'm joined with my co-host, Olivia, who goes by Sportivica on Twitter.
Yes, glad to be back. And I'm glad that we're taking our time with this podcast because I don't want to have to say goodbye to Pitch again anytime soon.
I got 2 more episodes after this. Oh my god.
Man.
I hate Fox. Okay.
Yep.
That's only one of the many things I hate. So, you'll hear more about that later on in the episode.
Yes, we'll dive into that too.
Today we're going to talk about episode 8 of Pitch called Unstoppable Forces and Immovable Objects. The episode was written by Becky Hartman Edwards and Esther Lou Wathers and directed by Chris Koch. So
it's another meaty one.
Yes, a lot going on. And for people who were turned off or maybe put off by the whole premise of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is more of a setting or a backdrop for this series than it is for...
Right.
Like, you don't really have to know anything about baseball to enjoy this show. That's one of the beauties of it. So, Olivia, why don't you get us started?
All right, so in the last episode, we start to learn that Mike, you know, the franchise player for the Padres, might not be a Padre anymore, even though he has a no-trade clause in his contract. That doesn't always guarantee you a safe spot on the roster, as Dee and I have learned as actual sports fans.
Yes.
So that is kind of the current drama in his life, and he's meeting his agent outside in an open-air restaurant and tells him that he'd really like to order a Bloody Mary, but he can't because they have a game today. But then Mike's agent says that it's supposed to rain, and it rarely ever rains in San Diego. He said that there have only been 17 rain-out games in 46 years, so it's not going to happen today, but... The moment he says that, in true Tragic Mike fashion, a couple raindrops drip right into his cup of coffee. So we know that today we're getting a rainout at the Padres game. And what we also learn from this conversation is that Mike has cleared waivers and several teams are interested in trading for him, so that's kind of a backdoor or way around the no-trade clause. So, yeah, you don't have to know a lot about sports or baseball, but you are going to learn some things about it through watching this show. But I don't think it does it in a very suffocating way. You know, it's compelling. Uh-huh. And Mike's agent says that Oscar wants to know if Mike is happy in San Diego. Mike says that his no-trade clause makes him very happy. But like we just said, you know.
Time to laugh.
Nothing is sacred. Nothing is sacred in sports. So.
Paul Pierce should have retired, you know, the Celtics, sorry.
Yes.
Yes, if you'd like to. His whole
life. Learn about our history with a no-trade clause. You can go back to our first podcast we did together called Seize Up.
Yes.
And just watch the, or listen to the rage unfold.
The bitterness, yes.
Yes. It made us into who we are today. But back to Mike and the Padres. His agent, you can tell, is kind of pressuring him softly, but it's still there, to consider waiving his no-trade clause and being open to being picked up by a contender. And at first, Mike is saying that the Padres are still in the playoff hunt. You know, he wants to win with the Padres, mm-hmm. but there are teams who are in better positions to win the World Series. And that Mike is a great player. He could pick really any team he wants. So they mentioned Boston and Chicago, and this was, I think, the year after the Chicago Cubs won the World Series for the first time in a billion years.
I think it was actually the year of.
Or was it during?
Yeah, because
okay.
as they were airing the last few episodes.
Yeah. The Cubs won. Yeah, they were still writing the mm-hmm. Right. So that was kind of cool timing.
Yep.
And so now Mike is picking up on what his agent is saying, and he's starting to feel a little bit cornered. So he's even grumpier than usual.
That's really grumpy.
yeah.
So the agent reminds him that he has until the end of the week to decide. And if he wants to be traded to a true playoff team, he has to be on a roster by September 1st. Mike wasn't happy with jinxing the weather earlier, so he kind of doubles down on it and tells his agent, "We'll get rained out before I ever leave San Diego."
That's when the raindrops come in.
Yep.
That's their cue.
Tragic Mike strikes again. They've pulled out the tarp for the Padres game, where the home team is up 5-1 on the Washington Nationals. Shout out to the local team. After four innings, even though they're losing, the announcer says that Ginny Baker was in a groove before they had to stop the game due to rain. And they reiterate, in case you didn't know, that the Padres are still fighting for a wild card spot. So this rainout is happening at the worst time.
And that gives you an indication of what Mike's agent means when he's talking about, you know, a real contender. Mm-hmm. If the Padres are still worrying about getting into a wild card game to get into the World Series, you know, the playoffs, then yeah, it's not as secure as probably the Cubs or the Red Sox.
So Mike and Blip want to stay dry and complain about the rain, like the old men that they are. But yep. Ginny wants to get on the bike and stay warm, keep the muscles warm, or go over hitters during their downtime of the rainout.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike snaps at Ginny when she comments about a fastball that Mike missed, and Ginny says, "Cranky today." And Blip says, "How can you tell the difference?" Which is a good ass
and
question.
But that's a very domestic conversation right there.
Basically. Yeah, Blip knows Mike.
Yeah. And so does Ginny, apparently.
Yeah.
So, while the players are whining about the rain and trying to distract themselves. There's also the wives and girlfriends of the team, and that's where Evelyn is in line. One wag, as they're called, is upset because her blowout just got ruined by the rain. And Evelyn tells her about her weather insurance idea for hair salons, which is kind of a hint into what will happen later in the episode, and that's why this one is one of my favorites, as we get to learn more about enterprising Evelyn. Mm-hmm. You know, she studied business at school, and she has kind of a knack for ideas, and it's exciting to see it later on. And, of course, another thing that we weep for, because it would have been great to see even more of that in a season 2 or 3 or 4.
This is gearing up for a really great conversation that she has with Blip in the next couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I have rarely seen in a show and rarely seen by a woman like Evelyn. So, looking forward to that.
Yeah. So then we also see Elliot and Amelia there, and Elliot tells Amelia that the mayor and his staff are in her suite, which is actually the Padre suite. But Amelia calls it her suite. So she can't go in there, so she's stuck in the same room, like family room, with the Wags. And for those of us who just, Amelia's already kind of on the bad side, on our bad side. You know, these kinds of things just, I don't know, just make you roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Elliot's looking forward to the bar in the family room and the fact that they have Grand Theft Auto 5 available for playing. So he's fine. He's happy. and Oscar also runs by to tell the Wags that there's hot chocolate, lots of towels on the way. I didn't know that that was his responsibility. But all right. He shares a meaningful look with one of the women played by the beautiful, wonderful, talented Sarah Shahi, who some may know as Carmen from The L Word, before walking away. And she follows him around the corner and asks if she's going to be seeing him tonight. And she reminds Oscar that he has no idea. Oscar says he has to go meet with the boss and make big baseball decisions, and they get very flirty before he decides to walk away. And this is where I'm like, why is all of this, I know that there's a, a rain delay right now, but why is all of this business happening during a game and just all of the stressful things that are said to the players, especially Mike and Jenny, during a game? Like Oscar and his agent and even his coach or manager, I guess they are called, they're talking to him about this no trade clause and his future, like during a game.
Yeah. Like it's never ever just about the game. Not for some of the fans, especially not for the players. And
yeah. Right.
That's one of the things that I love about this show is that it kind of peels back the curtain on stuff like this. So.
Yeah, like it really never stops.
Mm-hmm.
So, another thing that's making Mike grumpy is he wants to stay warmed up during the rain delay, and Al just tells him that he's done for the rest of the game. No matter, when they get to go back out on the field. And part of the reason why is because he's old. And we also learned that Al was a catcher too. And so, because he says, I know where you're headed. And I know what kind of pain and what things start to happen with your body the longer you play. So Mike is frustrated, to say the least. And he's already got this tension with Duarte, who, is the future of the team, and he plays at the same position as Mike. So Al's putting Duarte at catcher when they get back. And then we also see the new vice president wanting to push the groundskeeper to let them resume the game so that they don't have to refund the fans who are there. And he also is not really interested in a way for Mike Lawson to stay on the team. Oscar's trying. this may be the first time that we learn that the new VP's name is Charlie. It may not be. Neither of us care. I don't even want to call him the new VP because that's True Jackson's name. You know? Like, I don't... He doesn't deserve to be called that.
So, short, bossy guy.
Yeah.
Okay. That's your new name.
Yes. So, Mike is grumpier. There's a lot of things going on at once, as usual. And, have we gotten to the part where... Okay. We'll get to that in a second. I was excited by something that Duarte said, but we'll get to it in a second. Okay. So what happens next, Dee Dee?
Oscar asks Mike about how breakfast went with his agent. And I'm like, why is Oscar having messages sent to Mike through his agent instead of just talking
right.
to him? And yeah. And then trying to get feedback on the breakfast. Anyway, that's just really confusing for no reason.
Yeah.
So anyway, Oscar asks Mike about breakfast with his agent, but Mike doesn't want to talk about it. Mike never
he doesn't
want
to talk to anybody about anything.
No. they both think the Padres have a good chance at getting the wild card spot. And Oscar mm-hmm. tells Mike that we have a small window. And I don't know if this is for the wild card spot or, but I'm thinking it's about a window for making a trade.
Right.
But and Oscar doesn't specify and he just walks away.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably both. And I do believe that Oscar, in his heart, wants Mike to, you know, remain a Padre and win, you know, with the Padres. But, of course, it's a business, as we've learned. And I'm guessing, would a trade be better? Obviously, a trade, like, if Mike were going to leave the Padres, a trade would be better for the Padres because they would get something in return for losing Mike. But I'm wondering if it's also been more beneficial to Mike to be traded rather than to be put on waivers. Like, is that, I guess that would affect his contract. Once we get into the math of things, my brain kind of, you know, shuts it down. But I'm just, I'm just wondering why Mike would want to help the Padres, you know, find a good trade versus whatever the other option is. But anyways.
And also,
carry on.
And also, if Mike leaves, I mean, there's no guarantee they make the playoffs if he leaves and they have to mm-hmm. acclimate a new player to the roster right before postseason.
Yeah. I wonder what, the vice president guy, what he thinks about that.
Yeah, like, is he so gung-ho on this trade that he's willing to forfeit a possible playoff spot? Or does he think he can do both? You know what? I bet mm-hmm. short, bossy guy thinks he can do both.
Yeah, of course. He's kind of like Amelia, like, coming into this. You know, he thinks because he's from Silicon Valley and he knows the math side of it, apparently, that this will be easy.
We just follow the data and it'll tell us everything we need to know. No.
But he doesn't realize all of the juggling that Oscar does a lot of the time to juggle personalities and feelings.
Yes. Besides the data, there's actual people.
Playing
the game, providing the data. So just, mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, man. Don't get me started. where am I? Okay. So Duarte wants to talk about Jenny's groupies instead of going over hitters. And
that's where I was excited because he said men and women.
Yeah.
That Jenny has the sexiest groupies.
I'm like, okay. Duarte, what are you trying to say about yourself? let us know. He has great dimples. I think I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes, it's worth repeating
yes.
a thousand times over.
Very nice dimples. Dimples Duarte. He tells Jenny a story about his girlfriend Isabella that he had to leave to pursue his dreams. And he asks Jenny if she's ever been in love. And she quickly pivots back to talking mm-hmm. about Hitler. She doesn't want to talk about that at all.
Nope.
They're interrupted by a clubhouse employee telling Jenny that her brother is here to see her.
Yeah. And you could see when he was telling Jenny that he had to leave his girlfriend behind. You know, she seemed really affected by it. You know, maybe she's thinking about how she and her brother had to part ways. You know, her brother kind of told her, go on without me. Mm-hmm. You know, go with Amelia and follow her plan. So you could kind of see there that it, you know, she really felt that deeply.
And we go to our first flashback of the scene, of this episode, and it's a flashback of the last phone call between Will and Jenny. Will wishes her good luck. I think this is before her first game with the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
And she wishes Will was here with her. But he says that business is taking off, and they joke a little bit before he ends the call. And when he turns around in his hotel room, we see bruises and stitches on the left side of his face. So,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, Will was lying.
Yeah.
And
so, back in the... Sorry. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so back in the present, we do get to see Will and Jenny reunite, and she's really happy to see him. And you kind of see how close they were, you know, especially after their dad died and Will, like, really stepped in. It must have been a big contrast, you know. Jenny's dad was very firm. And it seems like Will, you know, like he says that he remembers how antsy she gets during rain delays and, you know, she doesn't like having nothing to do. Like, he really learned her habits and maybe comforted her more. And so that's when he says that also that's why he's trying to see her right now instead of waiting until after the game, which brings on a whole world of trouble because, like we said, people keep bringing up stuff that has nothing to do with the game to the players who are trying to play the game.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make any sense. So Jenny, of course, has other things to do right now, so she says that they'll catch up later. And ask the team employee, Jamie, who's right there, to take her brother to the Padres suite. But he can't go because it's booked with the mayor and all of his people, so he'll have to go to the family room. And he also kind of, at the last second, Will tells Jenny that he'll be calling her from another new number, and we learn that this is, you know, this has happened multiple times. And he kind of changes the subject really quickly by saying, you know, dinner tonight's on me. But you can still kind of see a flash of, like, Jenny being kind of suspicious, but probably decides to let it go in the moment.
Because mm-hmm. as she's walking away and he's walking the other way, she turns back around to look, and her smile kind of just falls. So,
yeah,
you can see the gears turning in her brain. She's not, she knows that everything's not okay.
Right.
Well.
Yeah. And now we are back with Oscar and the vice president meeting Russell, the groundskeeper, at his office, which is another cool behind-the-scenes thing that we get to see on the show. I like the groundskeeper, Russell. And the vice president just struts right in and calls him Russ instead of Russell, which is really disrespectful. And Oscar even told him not to do that.
Yes.
And I think that's exactly why he did that. It's because he was told not to, and I don't know if he was trying to establish authority or something, but it backfired quickly.
Yes. As many things with Short Bossy Guy tends to do. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what his deal is.
And when he asks Russell, you know, what's it looking like, Russell starts to explain, you know, things that I never even knew about. The silt to clay ratios, the fact that the turf looks fine, but the, you know, mound might need work. And the vice president just interrupts him and it's like, let's get to the point here. How long is it going to take to get the game back started again? And we know that it's not supposed to let up for maybe another 40 minutes. And then Russell even says that it would probably take that amount of time or even longer to get the field ready. So that, you know, is not going to work for the VP. And he starts to talk about the Yankees ground crew who can get it done in 28 minutes. And Russell says that the Yankees can do that because they deal with rain delays all the time in New York, but it's different in San Diego. It's not part of their regular routine, and they have done training for it, but again, it's not something that happens all the time. And the vice president tries to challenge him, you know, channel the Yankees, be the Yankees, and get it ready in 28 minutes, and it's... not working. It's not going to happen. And that just, this whole thing reminds me of a couple things. It reminds me of when I was a cashier and they would keep stats on how fast we scanned items and how fast we got to the part where customers paid. You know, it just seems so bizarre that they like monitored those things so closely when there's so many things that, you know, outside influences that can affect that. So I felt for Russell. And then it also reminded me of, you know, all the crap we here in the South get from the North when our schools shut down and our roads are closed and we have, like, you know, 2 inches of snow on the ground. And it's because we don't prepare for it because it doesn't happen all the time like it does up North. So it's, I'm with Russell. I'm Team Russell all the way. So, Russell's my friend.
Russell stands through, Short Bossy Guy's whole Be the Yankee spiel, and he's like,
yeah.
No. we can't get it ready.
Yeah.
In 28
minutes.
Well, I
love how he says this is my field.
Yeah. He's not trying to hear this at all. He says this is his field and his crew will take the time needed to make sure that his field is safe and playable. End of discussion. He doesn't back down. And finally, Oscar just pulls Short Bossy Guy out of Russell's office. Before tempers rise any higher, because the whole time Russell is going into his "this is my field" speech, Short Bossy Guy is going, "Yeah, really? Oh, really? Oh, this is your field?"
Yeah, and he's like stepping closer to him.
I'm like, and Russell is a good foot and a half taller than Short Bossy Guy.
Yeah,
or maybe I'm just imagining that. He's taller and wider than Short Bossy Guy, and yeah, he don't want it. He don't want
quickly.
It with Russell. He don't want it with Russell.
No.
So Evelyn finds Amelia and Elliot working in a quieter corner of the family room. And Amelia says that Ginny's schedule is impossible and she cancels more appearances than she books. Good. Because Ginny doesn't need all that kind of pressure. Evelyn calls it asset protection, and Amelia turns around and looks at Evelyn as if she's surprised that a wag would know something like that. So Amelia sounds feminist at times, but it's only because she's. It's like feminism, but for her only, or maybe for her clients. It's what did you call it before? It's a weird kind of selective feminism. So Evelyn tells her that she has 2 years of business classes at USC, and she
And then Amelia says again, "You went to USC?" But she says it like
yes,
that.
you. Oh my God. Oh my God, now you're. She did. I'm just like, yes. I'm like, she just told you that, Amelia. You're being really terrible right now. Oh gosh. Okay.
And she did go to USC, and that's not all.
Yeah, she says that she had a full ride to Marshall. Is that a special business school, or I don't even know. I tried to look it up, and all I got was a university in West Virginia that was named after a chief justice. But so I don't think it's that one. So maybe Marshall is a special school of business or something like that in California, and I just don't know about it. So feel free to write in and let me know where I'm wrong. And how bad I am at Googling.
If Evelyn got a full ride, I believe that it's very prestigious.
So she said she had a full ride to Marshall when she met Blip, and just as she was going into detail, she stops because she sees Will coming into the family room. And this is when all hell breaks loose in the family room. Evelyn is quite happy to see Will, and Amelia isn't, of course.
At
The sour milk look on her face. Oh.
So we've got our another flashback here, and Will is watching Ginny's first start on TV, which, if you remember from episode one, didn't go so well. And he gets a knock on his hotel room door, and it's Amelia. And she sees the bruises and the stitches on his face and wants to know what's going on. And Will just says that it was a disagreement with a business partner that got heated. Amelia doesn't believe him. And so Will tells the truth that he got behind on a loan payment. $20,000 to be exact. And we start to realize that's part of the reason why Will wasn't actually at Ginny's first game or first start. And he wants to be there for her second start, but Amelia tells him that Ginny can't see him like this. And so she writes him the check to cover the debt. And Amelia says, "Let her have her moment without having to worry about you." And it's just another example of Amelia not even giving Ginny a chance to make this decision for herself. She just decides not to tell Ginny at all and just inserts herself in Ginny's personal life, her family. And she knows that Will is obviously vulnerable. He may even be in danger. And so she writes him the check and leaves it there. And then we go back into present day in the locker room. Blip sees, or clubhouse, Blip sees Mike watching a Cubs game. And Mike is paying attention to the pitchers, as a catcher might. And so Blip kind of tries to ask about the trade rumors. And, you know, says, why don't you do something about it instead of sitting in here and stewing, which you're obviously doing. You know, go talk to Oscar. Or do something. Because the rest of the team is, like, obviously on Twitter and just on their phones. And I love how he kind of, you know, tells Mike he wants him to give another speech. He's, like, telling him all this different, like, go talk to Oscar. Go, you know, give a speech. Do something. And Mike's like, everybody's sick of hearing my speeches.
Blip's like, more sick of them than I am.
Yeah, believe me. And so he goes to Mike's locker and pulls out a box and asks for Mike to hold it. And Mike refuses and then decides to go talk to Oscar instead. Whatever could that mean? We will find out.
Oscar visits with Al in his office, and Al says he's giving Jenny 30 minutes before he pulls her, too. And Oscar says that short, bossy guy is worried about fan retention if Jenny's not out there after the rain delay. Al's not worried about that. He's worried about Jenny. And I'm like, thank God.
Thank you.
Somebody is. They veer into a discussion about Sunday dinners and how Oscar hasn't been invited in some time, but especially since he became Al's boss. But they get interrupted when Mike knocks on Al's window, and Oscar asks to use Al's office, and Al agrees, but Oscar says he's not leaving. I come with it. Oscar asks Mike several times if he's happy here. Mike says he could be happier if he had a chance to compete for a championship before he retired. And mm-hmm. Oscar says the Padres might have a better shot at competing if Mike left.
Ooh.
What the fuck, Oscar? That's not what you told Short Bossy Guy. You said you...
Well, he... Maybe he's manipulating. You know, maybe he's trying to get some wheels turning.
Oh, man. I hate this stuff.
That's harsh.
It is. Al states for the record that he wants Mike to stay. Not just in the bullpen, and not just on, you know, the catcher's mound, but also in the clubhouse. He needs that,
mm-hmm.
that veteran presence in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Mike says he'll let Oscar know how happy he is by the end of the day. So we have another ultimatum within the ultimatum, because the agent gave him till the end of the week, but Mike's giving Oscar till the end of the day. And it's already a rain delay, and where he's no longer playing. So things aren't looking good.
No.
Mike sees Jenny and Duarte walk by doing more game prep, and he taps Blip to wake him up, and then grabs the box out of his drawer. He opens it up to reveal a gavel.
But there are a couple instances of jealous, tragic Mike. I remember, like, the first time that Jenny and Duarte started walking off together with their little, like, mommy-poppy exchange.
Yeah.
And Mike, like, cursed. Like, he saw them walking out and he said something like, damn it. Oh, God. And so then he sees them doing more game prep. And immediately he goes over to get this gavel that will bring the whole team together. So Blip announces that court is now in session with the Honorable Mike Lawson presiding, and Dorothy and Jenny walk back into Kangaroo Court, where errors on the field and clubhouse infractions are tried and guilty parties are fined. You are guilty until proven innocent in this court. So that sets one stage. And then in the family room, Will is asking Evelyn about the twins while Amelia's, you know, like one table over, just side-eyeing the entire exchange. And Will tells Evelyn that he's scouting locations for a sports bar in the area, part of his plan for a nationwide franchise called Scroogey's Bar and Grill. And Amelia immediately butts in to say that sports bars are, you know, among the hardest things to franchise.
Nobody asked you, Amelia.
Were you a part of the, you're on your computer over there.
ABC your way out of this conversation.
Yeah. Will says, you know, he has an idea in mind that will set this franchise apart from others, and each bar will capture the personality of the city and the local sports stars there, which is why he wants to start with San Diego, because his sister is the biggest star in San Diego sports at that moment. And Amelia, you can already tell she is going to shut that down.
Yeah.
But Evelyn gets really excited and starts brainstorming ideas for how they need to have a plate called a Baker's Dozen. And so it's really cool to see, one, see Evelyn, you know, be her amazing self and, like, support Will's idea, but also to see her own, you know, creativity and her business IQ, you know, like, once she's given that moment or that opportunity, she's got all these ideas ready to go.
Yeah.
And so, but they can't have their fun for long.
Yep, Amelia has to shut that down. Yeah, I really love, because after that weather insurance for hair salons idea, her brain's just been business, you know, business ideas nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
She's on fire, and it's nice to see her charged up about something other than,
right,
you know, Blip's career or Jenny's career or, you know,
yeah,
something that's hers. So.
Mm-hmm.
Amelia asks if he cleaned up all his business in Charlotte, and Will says yes. He turns back to Evelyn to hear some more menu ideas. And, of course, Amelia doesn't look convinced. I just want to say, really, Amelia, like, it's bad enough that you want to just butt into people's conversations, but to ask that kind of question in front of other people that know nothing about it, like, you're mm-hmm. really, you're purposely trying to embarrass him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe he deserves it, maybe he doesn't. It's still not cool. It's not cool to Evelyn.
No. Or Will or Jenny.
It's not. It's really disrespectful. And you just, like, what is Amelia's real motivation behind taking Will down?
Mm-hmm. And how much does she even know about what happened? You know, it's like she immediately assumes the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, maybe Will did make some bad decisions, make mistakes. But, you know, you see it happen all the time that people, good people, get into bad situations like that. And if you think about Will, I mean, his dad, who he had, who we'll see, you know, he had this really strained relationship with him. And, you know, it would make sense for him to grow up resenting his sister because of it. But he doesn't. When their dad dies, he steps right in, and he is Jenny's number one fan, and you can see in earlier episodes he had so many ideas for Ginny's career that they were both excited about. You know, so that's where it's kind of hard to, like, understand Amelia's point of view, because I didn't get the vibe the first time watching this episode and rewatching it now that Will has truly bad intentions with Ginny. I don't feel like in his heart he's trying to take advantage of her or, you know, exploit the guilt that Ginny feels, one, for how their dad treated Will, and then for leaving with Amelia. I don't feel like, you know, in my eyes, I feel like he had that same enterprising mind, and he tried to do something on his own. At home, he didn't ask Ginny for money. He had that loan. And it just went south. And maybe after that experience and how Amelia didn't even let him talk to his sister, maybe that set him on a worse path. I don't know. But it's really hard to understand Amelia. It's hard to, and you know, seeing how she handles Ginny's life, it's sometimes hard to believe that she does have Ginny's best interest at heart any more than Will does. I mean, do you feel like Will is, you know, trying to take advantage of Ginny?
I don't know. All I know is that Amelia doesn't really care about Will's intentions. I mean, even from the first time when she tried to scoop Ginny out of his, out of his management, she's always seen Will as a threat for some reason, and she's treated him like a threat. Something that needs to be eliminated. And
she can say that she just cares about Ginny all she wants, but how does she not understand that caring about, you know, Ginny cares about her brother.
Yeah, Ginny cares about her family, and you tearing down her family is not going to get you in her good graces.
Right.
And as far as but Will's intentions, I know he pitched that idea about the different franchises for Scroogies. I just feel like after San Diego, none of those other ones are going to get built. Because Will won't have the connections in other cities that he does in San Diego.
Right.
So,
I mean, if this show had more, you know, seasons and things went well, but I kind of have a feeling that Will was set up to be a tragic character. So that part, I am kind of glad that didn't completely pan out, because that would have been heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Especially because BJ Britt has just this very sweet face, you know, like you want to root for him. Which is probably part of the reason why he was cast. Like, it's hard to look at him and, like, you know, think he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, got such that, you know, sweet smile.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. But in a good alternative, I mean, maybe it would have been, you know, they just decided to stay in San Diego. I mean, they could have built multiple restaurants in that area alone. But I guess we'll never know.
God damn it, Fox. So
back at the court.
Okay. Forgot where we were.
I think that's where we are.
Is it me?
We got off on there.
Yes, we did. Yes, okay. Back at court, Mike and Blip are presiding over a charge of manscaping. TMI. first of all, and not wearing flip-flops in the shower, which, gross.
Yuck.
Hey, enjoy the athlete's foot if that's what you want. The player pleads guilty and puts $20 in the jar. Jenny's up next, and she disputes her charge and gets a teammate called Omar to testify for her. Mike doesn't like that, and he blows up and yells at her in front of everybody for defying his ruling. As he walks out of the locker room, Blip calls a 10-minute recess.
And this is the same call that they were arguing about earlier in the show.
The fastball. Mike is just a testy guy. Jenny finds Mike outside of the locker room, and importantly, she finds him one-on-one to talk instead of blowing up at him in front of the entire team.
Michael.
Do better, Michael.
I do have to say, this scene, really good acting. They had great chemistry together. Their fight.
Freaking Fox. So Jenny finds Mike and apologizes, but Mike just wants to rant about her being a annoying little duckling and who knows nothing, and it's been all about her since she got here, and Mike says he's sick of it and walks away. And I'm like, he is having a 35-year-old temper tantrum. Like, what are you doing? Oh my gosh. He's like a certain villain in a certain sci-fi franchise that destroys stuff when they do, when things doesn't go their way, and like
Whew, that's a whole other
we'll talk about that rant offline.
And a half.
Jenny asks Blip what's wrong with Mike, and he says Mike is tired of watching other teams in the playoffs while he sits at home. And while the Padres still have a chance to make the playoffs, Blip says other teams are closer. Jenny says it's Mike's job to dig deep and make the team do the same. And Blip's just like shaking his head and like, oh, you sweet soul.
Well, Blip's like, hey, I tried to get him to give a speech earlier. I tried everything.
Yeah. Blip just finally says, you know, tells Jenny that she has 15 minutes to warm up.
So, now we're back with Oscar and Sarah Shahi outside of the family room. She's saying that she can't take the Wags anymore, saying that the Beverly Hills Housewives, they make the Beverly Hills Housewives look Amish, so there's a lot of drama there that we're missing out on, apparently. But then they kiss, and Oscar's worried about the cameras seeing them, but she says that this particular area is a blind spot. So we're starting to wonder, who is this lady, and how does she know the arena so well? Then she asks how it went with Mike, and he says, not well. And it didn't. And they make plans for later. He wants to go out instead of going back to her place, which you can kind of tell that's what they usually do. He's tired of sneaking around. And now we're back to Will and Evelyn inside the family room, and he's pitching his idea for the bar to Evelyn. He's talking about bars in 8 cities by the year 2021. And Evelyn calls the plan aggressive, but, you know, it's a very soft way of kind of slowing him down a bit. Like, she's really, I'd love to see her negotiate. She suggests a location downtown for the first bar, and Will offers for her to come along when he talks to a realtor tomorrow. And Evelyn insists that if they're really doing this, then she wants to be made a partner in this plan. So go, Evelyn. Meanwhile, Amelia has Elliot dig up some dirt on Will, which I don't like that she made Elliot do that. But, like, she dragged Elliot into this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've always wanted Elliot to be, like, good friends with Ginny, but... according to Elliot's sources, Will is still in debt and creditors are looking for him. So she interrupts Will and Evelyn's conversation again to kind of talk about the state of the San Diego real estate market and that it's hard to get a loan, especially if you have bankruptcy on record, which is personal.
Yes. Another thing that you shouldn't be discussing in front of other people.
No, and Evelyn even, you know, gives her, like, a Amelia, you know, sort of warning, like, why? What are you doing? And it's like you say here in the notes that you wish Ginny could see this side of Amelia, because I don't know if she's really seen that part of it. You know, she has been disappointed in Amelia's actions before. I'm really upset with her, but Amelia's always kind of managed to talk her way out of it.
Mm-hmm. But if she could see this...
She hasn't seen that.
She could
not
talk.
That's just... That's heartless right there.
Mm-hmm. So Will's counting on Ginny to be a private investor. Since he won't be able to get a loan due to bankruptcy. And he even says Amelia can invest too if she's interested. Which, okay, Will, you have jokes. You don't see how intensely she despises you right now? Amelia declines. Will asks if she is Jenny's agent or her business manager, because she can't be both. Amelia says she's whatever Ginny needs her to be. But
well, how does she know what Ginny needs if she doesn't tell her anything?
Exactly. Ding, 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 ding. that would, you know, that would require Amelia actually owning up to some of the shady shit that she does. Amelia's not about to do that because she knows that Ginny would drop her like a bad habit. Will says Ginny doesn't need her worrying about his business. And then he goes back to Evelyn to see more prospective locations for bars.
I love that, you know, we kind of see here that Evelyn, you know, she, it's like she's already kind of keeping track of these sorts of things. You know, I wonder, like, what, you know, maybe publication she's reading or what. Like, she just knew that, you know, off the top of her head. So it kind of gives you, you know, like, some clues as to, you know, maybe Evelyn's been thinking about, you know, going into business for a while now. And that's probably the reason why she's so excited by this sudden conversation with Will.
Well, she's always looking at the real estate market, looking for new houses for her and Blip and the kids.
True.
So,
yeah,
she may have just, you know, bookmarked these other places like, you know, if I, you know, thinking about maybe starting
maybe
a business
someday
in a few years, you know, when the kids are older. And, you know, hey, if it doesn't work out for me, maybe these would be good for Will. So,
yeah.
Just Evelyn being awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We get another flashback, and this is with beat down Will, who still has the bruises and scratches on and stitches on his face. And he approaches Jenny's hotel room as she's coming back from the failed first start with the Padres. She gets into her hotel room without any disturbance, and Will passes a mirror and sees his messed up face in the reflection, and it makes him stop, and he walks back to his hotel room before Jenny can see him. He picks up the check that Amelia gave him and makes a decision. So,
And that's where you start, like, it makes me think that Will coming this time, I mean, yes, he does have the creditors looking for him, so he is desperate, but I think it's also like he really does want this to work. You know, like it's for the right and wrong reasons that he's there. You know, because he already before, you know, seemed to make the decision like Ginny doesn't need this right now and decides to leave. Oh. And then he's made that decision before too when he urged Ginny to choose Amelia, to go with Amelia. Sad stuff, man.
because you would think, because you would think Amelia would remember just how low and kind of desperate she felt when she first stomped onto that muddy field in what, Texas, to go see Jenny Baker. Like, she was in a low spot herself, but she doesn't seem to think that other people would be in that same kind of place. Jenny's warming up on the bike when she gets a text from an unknown number. It's Will asking for help. She closes the messages and storms out of the fitness room, and she's screaming, "Am I the only one who knows we're in the middle of a game right now?"
Yes, Jenny, I'll answer that for you. Yes.
Yes, you are.
So Oscar meets with the VP again to talk about Mike. The rain has tapered down to a light drizzle. Looks like things might get moving again. And the VP wants to go ahead and lift the tarp, resume the game, you know, announce to the fans. But if Russell wants to be the immovable object to the VP's unstoppable force, then Oscar needs to find someone who moves. So there we have our title. And they decide to go talk to the umpire. Ginny comes to the family room and asks Will what's going on. And I can't, like, I don't. It's just like, I don't know if you know, bring your sister in when she's in the middle of a game to. Anyway, Will says that he's changed the name of the bar from Home Plate to Scroogie's, and Amelia is trying to stall this conversation, but Ginny puts, you know, her full commitment behind Will. She's like, all right, let's do it, all in front of Amelia, and she tells Will to come walk with her. She tells him that she'll support his business ventures, but don't put her on the spot in front of everybody. Look at Ginny,
Being mature.
you know, always making the effort to have that one-on-one conversation in private. If only some other people be more considerate. Will does sound childish when he's saying that Amelia was going after him. Like, Ginny doesn't need this right now. And he says that Amelia hasn't forgiven him for June. And Jenny asks what happened in June. And now Will tells her, well, let's wait until after the game.
Oh my God.
But you can't do that to her now. You can't, and I do kind of feel like Will intentionally slips that in So, well, that's another thing that's coming up. And in the locker room, Blip sits next to Mike, and they talk about how Kangaroo Court was a flop because somebody stormed out. And Omar comes by and tells them that he didn't actually see the hit and run sign that, you know, he told Jenny that he did. And Jenny thought, well, if I saw it and someone else saw it, that means I'm right. And that's why Mike, part of the reason why Mike got upset. And Omar says he said that because he was embarrassed about missing a call. And the reason that he missed it was because he was too busy looking at Jenny. And he admits that he thinks he might have feelings for Jenny.
Understandable.
Yes. But cue jealous, tragic Mike.
Oh, man. Mike and Blip take him to a whole other room.
I love that Blip's there.
Like, Blip has to moderate the proceedings because we know how
always.
It can always go left with just Mike. So they go into the massage room and kick all of the trainers out of there.
Yeah.
And just full on interrogate Omar about these feelings he says he has for Jenny. Mike wants to know, what do you even know about Jenny? Just flat out, Mike has no tact, has no grace about it. He doesn't even know about this woman. Omar doesn't know that she hums Katy Perry songs off key while she stretches and can talk for 30 minutes about why she loves grape soda and hates cilantro.
Yes, those are such valid opinions.
Yes, and but Mike does, and he says he's not fallen for her.
You don't have feelings for her.
Oh, Mike.
So this is basically Mike, like, you don't know what it is to love Jenny. Let me tell you what it is to love her.
But I don't really
and
love
I
her.
Love the, yeah, of course. And Blip, like, at the beginning, you know, he's like, yeah, let's school this guy. You know, he probably thinks they're going to go in there and say, you know, be a professional, you know, don't act like, you know, a teenager who can't control yourself, like, don't stare at Jenny during a game. That's probably, he thinks they're going along those lines. Then Mike comes in with this, you know, poem about all the things he loves about Jenny. And what I also love is, like, Blip's like, is that what she's humming? It's Katy Perry? And Mike says, you know, yeah, she's so off key you can't even tell what it is. But if you listen carefully...
like I do.
So, yes, he's listening carefully because he loves her.
It's the worst
so I just love Blip. Oh, my God. And Blip's just like, oh, boy. Detective Blip is on the case again.
Yeah. And he's already solved it because he's like,
yep.
He's full of shit. He totally loves Jenny.
Oh, brother. Yep.
Back in the family room, Jenny is looking for Amelia. But all of a sudden, she's MIA, missing in action. Evelyn says that... Amelia is looking for Jenny, too. They finally meet each other in the hallway outside of all of these rooms. And Jenny confronts her about what happened in June. Jenny says she doesn't want to have to choose between Will or Amelia. The first time that she had to choose, she chose Will. And Will chose Amelia. Amelia says Jenny is lucky that he did. And Jenny just nods and says, yeah, but it's a really non-committal yeah. Tell me if you
like, was it worth it?
Yeah, she's like, yeah, that's what happened. I'm not so sure how lucky I feel right now. That's what my face told me.
So, there's that. And then Oscar takes the VP to a batting cage to keep him out of trouble. He asks him why he chose to run a baseball team, and this is where we learn it's because of the math. He says that if you crunch enough numbers, it's almost like you can predict the future. So I guess he saw Moneyball and felt smart.
Yeah.
And Oscar tells the VP that he can't get Mike to agree to a trade. He can't stop the rain. He can't convince Russell to work faster. But what he can do in the meantime is blow off some steam and hit some baseballs. And the reason he can't get Mike to agree to a trade or for Russell to work faster is because they aren't numbers.
Yeah, they're people.
Yeah.
And you know what? I guess this is probably giving Short Bossy Guy more characterization than he deserves. But I was wondering for a second, with all his talk about numbers and data and, you know, predicting the future, if he might be on the autistic spectrum.
Hmm.
Possibly. And it might explain how he's not really good with people.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, not to excuse some of the really kind of shitty stuff, but it's just something that I wondered. If we had a season two, we might have been able to find out. Fucking Fox.
Exactly, and that that could have been a really compelling part of the whole story of the show if we did have that season two. But yeah, fair point. And Kangaroo Court is back in session. When Jenny walks back into the locker room, she's already had, a day. And Omar wants to change his testimony. But Mike, in a grand romantic gesture, pulls rank and says that due to his age and his cloudy cataracts, he missed the sign. And this is where, like, at the beginning of the show, we see Jenny being able to read Mike and telling, and being able to tell, you're grumpy all the time, but there's something off about the grumpiness today. And it's just, Jenny walks into the room and Mike, already knows that he was really hard on her earlier. And also, Jenny's had, it's just another day in Jenny's life, so I'm going to go ahead and assume she's had a bad day. But before he can do that, Jenny speaks up and blames herself, and Mike's like, I can't believe you're challenging me again, but this is also why I love you so much. So Blip declares the case a mistrial due to a well hunter. Okay.
And everybody's like, hey!
We can all agree to that. And that's when Al comes in to tell the team that the tarp is coming off the field. They have 20 minutes to get ready to play, and Jenny is playing.
So, Sarah Shahi, and I can't believe we haven't gotten a name. We've gotten a name for everybody else in this episode. Even the clubhouse employees. Okay. We got a name for Bossy Short VP, but not Sarah Shahi. So I have to keep calling her Sarah Shahi. Sarah Shahi tells Oscar that she was praying for a rainout so he could get out of work early. And also because she has patients to see in the morning. See, we even know she's a doctor. Or a nurse or some kind of medical professional.
Right.
We don't know her name. We find out that she's Al's daughter. Because Al catches up with them and they make plans for Sunday dinner. And she walks off. Al asks Oscar, like he didn't notice that significant look that Sarah Shahi gave Oscar before she walked away. Al starts talking to baseball the minute that she leaves, and he's alone with Oscar. So Al asks Oscar where they are with Lawson. Whatever. Okay.
Meth.
Yes. In the family room, Amelia asks Will again if he's cleaned up the trouble he was in 3 months ago. She wants to know why he's really here. What's his end game? Will says he's not here to work for Jenny. He wants to work with her. And Amelia thinks this is the wrong time to capitalize on Jenny's fame. When is the right time for her? Answer, never.
If that's, what is she doing with all those interviews?
Basically.
Is that not cap? Okay.
Yeah. But it's different when she does it.
Yeah. And Will also says something like, you know, this is bigger even than our father's dream. And I feel like it is, he might say that because in this scenario, it's a dream that includes both him and Jenny. So,
and also, that's...
I got my old heartstrings there.
Yeah. And also, saying that, mentioning their father is, you know, something that, you know, alienates Amelia. So because
yeah.
Does Amelia even know or care what Bill Baker's dream for his children was? So, that was pretty slick, Will. He's taken some jabs this episode, but he's thrown a couple too.
Right.
Amelia says that Jenny's under enough pressure, but Will is undeterred. And Mike finds Jenny stretching in the weight room. They start going over hitters. And Jenny tells him that she wouldn't know what to do without him. He leaves her humming the worst rendition of Fireworks ever.
Sorry, go ahead.
I don't think I would have recognized the song if he hadn't said that's what it was before.
Right. Which is funny because Kylie Bunbury is actually a great singer. If you follow her on Instagram, she posts stories of her singing all the time. So, but Mike also tells Jenny that she'd be fine without him. And then we get that lingering, he just, you know, watches her fondly while she's humming and doesn't even know that he's still there. So then Oscar finds him in the now empty locker room. They don't even look at each other. And Mike just says, Chicago, fade to black. And maybe that was part of, you know, Mike's frustration throughout the episode too, like seeing Jenny with Duarte. You know, he's seeing this future of the team without him. And thinking about what Oscar said, that they might have a better chance without him.
But
this was one of my favorite episodes because it had all the pining Mike and the jealous Mike and Evelyn, you know, being brilliant. So lots of good things, lots of frustrating things, but some good things too.
And for once in his life, tragic Mike picked right. If he had gone to Chicago, he would have won a championship. The irony!
Tragic.
Just slapping him in the face. Oh my god. So, that has been episode 8 of Get Her in the Game. You can reach us at Dust Daughter. Olivia is at Sportifica, S-P-O-R-T-I-F-I-C-A.
There you go.
And You can email the show at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. And until next time, when we talk about episode 9 of 10. Take care and bye.
Bye-bye.